From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later tonight with the Graveyard Hotline. I'll tell you about that. Well, here's some of the news of the day. Then we'll get right into our very special report. And I'm telling you, big report from Linda Moulton Howe. Well, on the East Coast, brace yourself for Saturday night. New York, Boston, D.C., and a number of other cities, a blizzard watch in effect Saturday evening through Sunday morning. Huge gusts of wind. Snow could be anywhere from 6 to 12 inches. Global warming, it's time for winter, isn't it? So just be careful out there on the East Coast. Earthquake time, Gulf of Mexico, magnitude 5.2. It was 165 miles from New Orleans. What is going on? Testifying today before a Senate committee, former federal disaster czar Michael Brown from FEMA implied that the Bush administration was dishonest about when it was told the situation in New Orleans, that it was turning dire following Hurricane Katrina. How quickly they turn, don't they? The former head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency testified that on the night the hurricane made landfall, he spoke on the phone with a senior White House aide to notify him of the flooding in New Orleans, which lies, of course, below sea level. This is what he said. I think I told him that we were realizing our worst nightmare, that everything we had planned about, worried about, was coming true. That, again, from Michael Brown, the former head of FEMA. He has resigned. The Alaska Volcano Observatory's very popular website lets you track Augustine's activities from live earthquake data to hourly updates on the blasts of ash and rocky flows that have rumbled down the snowy volcano since it began erupting in mid-January, with a network that includes seismic stations, cameras, and global positioning system receivers. Augustine is now the most heavily instrumented volcano in the state of Alaska. Because of the website, residents of remote Alaska communities can make better decisions about whether to shut down schools, carry dusk masks to church, or take time to cover heating vents with all kinds of things to filter volcanic ash. If you want to take a look at the daily pictures of Augustine, you can go to www.avo.alaska.edu. That's avo.alaska.edu, and you'll see some incredible pictures of that volcano. In Malaysia, the Islamic world is fed up with violence and extremism in the name of religion and is ready for an era of progressive, democratic Muslim governments. This all from the former president of Iran. How about that? His name is Mohammad Khatami, and he said that current conflicts between the West and Islam have created a situation that can only see ever-escalating violence, whether in the form of war and occupation and repression. He is somewhat of a moderate. He was Iran's leader from 1997 until June, when then Mahmoud Ahmadinejad became the president. A federal judge says he's considering setting a deadline for the Justice Department to produce records on the Bush administration's surveillance program or to explain in court why it was refusing to do so. The U.S. District Judge, his name is Henry Kennedy, said he was convinced the public would suffer irreparable harm if the government dragged its feet in a lawsuit filed over access to the documents. The lawsuit was filed by three private groups who say the government is engaging in a pattern of delay and should be compelled to provide information on the underlying legal rationale for the surveillance and the scope of the eavesdropping program. Congress, by the way, is also having difficulty getting the same information. In Fort Lauderdale, a woman was charged with smuggling after federal screeners found a human skull in her luggage at the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. The woman had flown into Fort Lauderdale from Haiti. In her bag, they discovered a skull complete with teeth and hair in her luggage. What did she say all about it? Well, she says she believes in voodoo and says that she bought the skull from an unknown man in Haiti in the belief the head would ward off evil spirits. Well, in a moment, Linda Moulton Howe, as she continues her investigation into some incredible UFO discoveries that occurred near Roswell and the White Sands Proving Ground a long, long time ago. And then next hour, Linda Moulton Howe and I will talk with the mother of Daniel Barish from Area 51. What's going on in that story? Stick around. We'll be back with all of it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, she's our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, Emmy Award-winning television producer and reporter, author. She goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges and does not give up. Her website, earthfiles.com. This is a follow-up story this hour to an incredible story Linda had for us last month. And this all developed now from a phone call that came into the program when Linda was on the air with us. Linda, welcome back. How are you?
Well, thanks, George. And that's absolutely right. It was only 3 weeks ago on January 20th on Coast that I was reporting information from military, political, and scientific sources about aerial disc technology defined as interplanetary and extraterrestrial by the Truman administration. And that disc technology, which the public and the media have long called UFOs, interfered with our V-2 rocket test at New Mexico's White Sands Proving Ground, beginning around 1947, and we now know that's an absolute fact. We even shot at those discs. And there was retaliation. Well, during our radio program, Open Lines, a man named Don called in and said that his uncle from the U.S. Navy had a briefcase that contained top secret files in black and white photographs of crash disks and entities. And Don said that his uncle showed the contents of the briefcase to him and his mother and some other relatives sometime before his uncle's death in 2002, and before his uncle burned everything under orders, he said. And I asked Don if he would leave his phone number for me to follow up. He did, and tonight I would like to share some of the details that Don told me about the photographs and his uncle's alleged firsthand experiences, George, with live humanoids classified as extraterrestrial biological entities. And Don told me there was not just one crash. He said there were two others at the same time that his uncle talked about, one near the Trinity site on White Sands where we exploded the first atomic bomb test in July 1945. The third was east of Alamogordo and Holloman Air Force Base on the Mescalera Indian Reservation. Those three crash sites are consistent with the leaked MJ-12 documents that Bob and Ryan Wood have published and have been investigating now for several years. One is the July 22nd, 1947. That would be just a couple of weeks after the crashes. It's called Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit Summary. Another, the Majestic 12 Project's first annual report, was written later. And you can see, I think, important excerpts from these leaked, alleged government documents right now at my news website, www.earthfiles.com. At the top of the headlines page, there is a hot link to this science report and excerpts from these two important leaked documents. Now, the July 22nd, 1947, top secret interplanetary phenomenon unit document begins, quote, "The extraordinary recovery of fallen airborne objects in the state of New Mexico between 4 July to 6 July 1947 and goes on to say that about a half hour before the clock turned to midnight, going into July 4, 1947, quote, radar stations in East Texas and White Sands Proving Ground, New Mexico, tracked two unidentified aircraft until both dropped off radar. Two crash sites have been located close to the White Sands Proving Ground," unquote, and those were specified as near Corona and the other near Oscura Peak and the Trinity site at White Sands. And later, in the Majestic 12 First Annual Report, they had learned more, and they talk about a third crash site listed as 30 miles east of Alamogordo on the Mescalero Indian Reservation when, the same time, between July 4th and July 6, 1947, and according to these leaked government documents, bodies were found at both the Corona and the Trinity site locations, and Don told me his uncle showed him black and white photographs of all three crash sites. And near Corona, he said there was a photograph of a disc embedded at an angle in a hillside and two entities standing up alive next to it. There were also two smaller dead bodies on the ground. One had an arm and leg cut off, and the other had a slice across its belly. Don assumed this happened from the crash impact. We are going to hear him describe what he saw in his uncle's briefcase in just a moment. But first, I would like you to hear the voice message that Don left on my telephone a couple of days after our January 31st phone interview, and after I had tried several times to reach him again with follow-up questions. Here now is Don.
Hi, Linda, it's Don. The reason I ain't returning your calls, your phone's been bugged. I've been getting some calls, and I've had people following me, so I'm going to kind of back out of this. I don't know what to tell you. You can call me and I'll answer it, but I ain't going to say anything else. You know, this is just getting a little bit too scary because I just had a feeling I shouldn't have opened up, but I figured it was a dead source, but it still ain't dead.
This isn't the first time that I have had a long, in-depth phone interview with somebody or have talked with them in person and have received exactly this kind of phone call from people backing away because the government comes and intimidates, even though his uncle has been dead for a long time and the documents were burned. And now let's go back about 5 years ago when Don's uncle in the Navy was still alive, but dying from a blood disease and other ailments. Don says that the briefcase was old, cracked leather from which his uncle took out file folders, documents, and black and white photographs of those July 1947 crashes in New Mexico. Two brief clarifications. Don said there were no ears on the beings, only tiny slits on the sides of their head, but he will use the word ears. And he says his uncle referred to beyond our galaxy from where they came and thinks that means outside our Milky Way galaxy, not just beyond our solar system, but he is not sure. And now he begins with describing what was stamped on the back of a photograph of a disc embedded at an angle in a hill near Corona from July 1947.
On the back, it said, property of the United States Navy, top secret.
The property of the Navy?
Yeah.
Did you ever see the letters M-A-J-I-C, magic, stamped on any of it?
It was across the top of the folder. It was in solid black and big, bold letters, black and white photos.
You saw these photos with your own eyes, right?
Yeah. Well, the first one would have been a craft on the side of the hill at an angle. Two bodies were on the outside and two were standing upright. The two dead were, one I remember, was just looked like he was split open, like somebody just took a knife and just laid him open. The other one was missing a leg and an arm. Again, from black and white, you really can't tell. The estimated height would be somewhere between 3 to 4 feet. Egg-shaped head, long arms, short legs, long pointy fingers. Mouths were round. It wasn't like our mouth. It was more like an oval shape.
Do you mean oval up and down or oval going sideways?
Sideways.
Okay, so you were not looking at just a thin line.
Right.
Was it especially dark compared to their skin?
About the same color as their eyes. Black and white photo because their eyes were like at a slanted angle.
Mm-hmm.
With a darkness to them. And they tapered down to like a little point where it goes toward your ears.
The points went toward the ears, not toward the nose?
The points went toward the ear. The skin looked wrinkled, almost like it had some type of uniform on it, but I really don't know. And it was just like you take a piece of paper and put a little crease in it. You know how the actresses use skin tone bodysuits?
Oh, yeah.
I would put it somewhere in that category.
Did your uncle explain how they got that disc embedded in the hill out? What did they put it on? How did they move it?
It was moved by a flatbed truck covered in a tarp with two cranes that removed it from the side of the hill and moved it in the middle of the night.
You thought maybe 30 feet in diameter?
Yep.
Did your uncle mention anything about our military firing at these discs?
Our military fired at them, but it didn't do any good. We were told not to tell anybody for the rest of our lives. But I figured, hey, it's time to let it out.
Right. I wondered if he said anything that day when he was showing you all this material from his briefcase. Did he say anything to you about why the secret would still be being kept in what essentially now is the 21st century?
They just don't want American people to know that ETs or humanoids or whatever you want to call them exist, and that some of them could have power to literally wipe us off the face of the earth.
Did he say that?
Yep.
Did he say anything about who these entities were, where they were from, and that sort of thing?
They're outside our galaxy. That's all he would tell us. And that they were trying to teach us what they knew of different forms of medicine. They were strictly here for peace.
From another galaxy?
Yeah.
What I think the government calls extraterrestrial biological entities, that the acronym is EBEN. Did your uncle ever use that term, EBEN?
Yeah, but he didn't pronounce it EBEN.
What did he say?
He said it was Ebon. Every now and then, you'd catch something on news or on that they broadcast from Spain or somewhere else showing this unidentified thing, and they were explaining this swamp gas and all this other stuff. And he'd just start laughing, and, you know, everybody would look at him like, what are you laughing at? And he'd say, if only the people only knew what it was.
He told you when he was showing you the photographs that these Ebons were from another galaxy and that they were here to teach us about medicine?
Yep. And how to live in peace.
They don't seem to be doing a very good job.
No, they don't. Of course, the government ain't letting them out either, are they?
It's a very big puzzle. And that's why I'm hoping that maybe your uncle told you something that would give us some insight about why it is all seemingly so strange, confusing, and complicated.
One letter I read, it was by a Welkerman or Walkerman, I don't remember the last name, but he said it would cause mass panic if the American citizen should find out about the ETs, because they would automatically confuse them and terrorize them.
They would automatically confuse the public?
Yeah.
And the terror would come from what?
That never went into detail. It just kind of ended there. I don't know if that meant terrorizing the aliens or terrorizing the American public.
And when we come back after this break, George, we'll go into what the uncle told Don about his telepathic communication with the Ebens. They made him trust them, even though the government had taken a position of tremendous mistrust.
I got to tell you, Linda, great job, first of all, in getting Don comfortable enough to come back and talk to you.
Yeah.
Especially after that phone call. Now, he sounded pretty jarred. And I got to tell you, for a moment, you sounded pretty jarred talking to him. You and I have talked before, and I think you've talked about it in the program. You think you've been bugged before, right?
Oh, my phone, wherever I've been, Denver, Boston, wherever, I've had people who have the electronic equipment, and my phone has been bugged so persistently since I did A Strange Harvest from 1980 on, and I've tried not to be paranoid about it, and I've said on the phone several times, if the government doesn't know what I know, then we're all in trouble.
We'll protect you, Linda, you know that. This is an incredible story. I mean, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And so I can't wait until the next half hour when we come back. And I'm also looking forward to this chat with the mother of Daniel Burrish. This is going to be interesting.
Okay.
All right, so you stick with us, Linda. Linda's website, of course, is earthfiles.com, where she posts regular information of the strange, the unusual, and the mysteries of this planet. So at any given time, go up to earthfiles.com. She's got a huge server there and can handle a lot of activity. But every once in a while, we've been known to even slow that up. But earthfiles.com is Linda's website. And as far as we are concerned, ours is coasttocoastam.com. And if you need to email me, you can do that anytime you want at george@coasttocoastam.com. You can also snail mail me if you want. And our guest, Linda Moulton Howe, and we'll be back with Linda as she continues this incredible story in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, let's get right into this story again. Then you and I'll have some moments to chat before our next hour, okay?
Right. And I'm hoping there might be some other Dons out there listening tonight on this Coast program, or people who might have some information that relates to what I'm reporting. And my email address is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. It's the same word as my website twice, earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And I'm happy to communicate with anyone off the record as well as on the record. Now, back 3 weeks ago on January 20th, the Coast to Coast we did then, I talked about how General Nathan Twining, back in the end of the 40s, has actually been found quoting and having been said that discs were, from his point of view, enemy weapon systems. And President Truman ordered the United States Air Force to shoot down and retrieve discs. Now, what we're going to come up with here in this next piece from the interview that I did with Don is his explaining from his uncle why there was so much aggression. And yet, his uncle did not agree with the policy. Let's hear now, Don.
Here we go.
According to Truman, he didn't trust him.
Do you know why?
No, it wasn't written. Truman just said to keep him under confinement and not to let a word leak out. And it was for private eyes only, if I remember the letterhead right.
Did your uncle try to explain to you anything that he understood about why Truman would not trust them?
No, he never did say that, but he had complete trust in him.
Your uncle trusted the Ebbens?
Yep. He said he didn't feel any fear around them.
So your uncle had been face to face with them?
Yes.
Did he have telepathic communication?
Like a trance state he fell into when he was standing next to him, and that it was just like a thought pattern. He could tell what they were thinking, and they read everything he was thinking, yet it sounded like they were talking back and forth.
But it was inside of his head?
Right.
And did he hear his own thought voice, or did they have a distinctly different quality of sound inside of his head?
He said they had a higher pitch than we do, mm-hmm. but it was completely audible, and he could understand every word they were saying.
Did he ever say that I asked them telepathically, why are you here, and hear from them directly?
That they were just basically here to shed peace upon the world and to teach us how to live in peace and to explain some of the medications that would cure 90% of the disease in the 50s.
Medications?
Right.
His closest contact with the Ebens was in 47?
48.
In 48, after the crash.
Right.
And where was that?
Greenland, Area 51, Groom Lake.
And that's where he was in contact with, was it one or more Ebens?
There was two there that he was in contact with.
And were they working with our government?
Yep.
And were they working on technology or?
The way he put it, it was a sealed room with a ball floating in midair suspended by nothing.
What were they doing?
What he witnessed was like, how can I put it? One room within a room?
Mm-hmm.
Like there'd be a cubicle inside of a larger room. There was a metal sphere, what he described, that was just literally being moved side to side, up and down, with nothing holding it.
Okay, now, was the metal sphere inside of a glass room?
Yeah, it was glass, plastic.
And then there was another room. Where were the people watching this?
In the exterior room. It would be like taking a cake and putting a small cake pan over top of it, a clear one, and then taking a larger one and putting it over top of the smaller one, like a confinement area.
Mm-hmm. And your uncle was in that outer room?
Right.
And where were the two Ebens that he was working with?
One was sitting next to him. The other one was sitting next to some high-ranking bird colonel.
What were the Ebens trying to demonstrate for your uncle and the bird colonel?
Defying gravity.
Were they doing it with their mind or something else?
Just with their mind. There was nothing else in there.
Okay, so the Ebens were trying to show that they could lift these metal spheres with their mind.
Right. And according to what my uncle said, they weighed anywhere from 100 to 200 pounds. So it was nothing like, it was like for them lifting a piece of paper.
Did your uncle understand why the Ebens were demonstrating that for our government and military?
Well, from what he theorized and what he could pick up, they were showing him the power of mind versus matter. So I don't know if the craft flies like that or what.
Yeah, did he say anything about them having hand-imprinted panels and a band around their heads that they used to fly the craft with their mind?
There was a hand-imprinted panel on two sides of the craft, one in the back and one in the front.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that was for a pilot and a co-pilot, but he never mentioned nothing about a band.
About what?
About a band around their head.
But from your discussion with him and his explaining doing this work at Area 51, you understood that these beings probably flew the craft with their minds?
From the impression he gave me, yeah.
And that those hand-imprinted panels had something to do with being able to control the craft with their mind?
Right. Like, horizontal, vertically, could have something to do with speed. I have no idea what they're powered by, and neither did he. So we're assuming it's all mind over matter.
But why would they have come from another galaxy all the way to here?
Nuclear bomb explosion in, what, 1941?
We exploded the first atomic device at Trinity site at White Sands in July of 1945.
Okay. That's the only thing he would say. It had something to do with the first bomb we blew off. We were getting too powerful for our little tiny planet. It would be like a Star Trek film where a parent body would be watching over its child.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he kind of described it.
So did he ever suggest that human beings might have been made by these Ebens?
He thought about it, but he couldn't prove it.
Well, when you say he thought about it, what did he say to you specifically?
Specifically? He says we're all probably from outer space and don't know it.
That we humans are.
Yeah.
And that there might be a relationship between what he called the Ebens, and I've heard Ebens, the ones that were in the crashes at Roswell, and humanity.
Right.
Why, if they are so advanced, if they can control craft with their mind, if they can mentally lift up heavy metallic balls inside of a glass room at Area 51, why would their craft have ever crashed in New Mexico or anywhere else on the planet?
Up to his dying day, he couldn't even figure out why there was such a tight lid on it. But he didn't make one comment that didn't make any sense. He says, the government will never know, and some of them are actually ours. And I have no idea what that means. Somebody was watching him till the day he died. But he didn't say if it was intel or just somebody from the president assigned to watch over him, or the Navy assigned to watch over him, or who assigned to watch over him, because he didn't know.
Why then do you think that he pulled out that old briefcase with the files of the photographs from Roswell, the top secret documents, one even labeled magic. Why did he do that?
Just to get rid of it, because that was, he said that was his orders to destroy anything if he ever thought he was going to die. And he found out he was going to die within 2 years.
And he decided to show you all?
Yep, because we kept bugging him.
And then he burned it?
Yep, and that was the end of it.
But why would he have been allowed to keep all of this material in a briefcase in the first place?
That I don't know.
And that, to me, is one of the big puzzles, because I think that Don is trying to describe exactly what he saw with his own eyes, even if we don't have context for a lot of the questions and what seem to be such paradoxes. If a man had telepathic communication with these beings and thought that they meant nothing but peace, why is it that the administration had taken a position, basically, of military aggression? And to this day, in 2006, I would say that there is still indications that there is some kind of, I don't know if you would say Earth's secret war, that sounds awfully strong, but let's put this way, a stance of not trusting, and that the human side of things from a government point of view seems to be one of, we better get ready and have weapons in space and be able to deal with whatever might be coming. And that, to me, George, is one of the big puzzles, because you hear of some people who have had firsthand experience with the what they call the Ebens, or extraterrestrial biological entities, who say that they think that they are they have no hostility toward humanity at all. And yet, I personally received a letter, a handwritten letter from somebody who was working in an agency in Washington, D.C. back in the mid-1980s. And the letter to me, among many other things, said, and we know the Ebens lie, L-I-E. I have never been able to get more details about that, but I think that that gives or should give pause that we, if we're dealing with such advanced technologies, they shouldn't crash. And that was suggested to me also, that our government began to wonder if some of the crafts and the crashes were absolutely planned so that certain technologies would be put in our hands. One man said, we know that we were given red herrings to slow us down in some areas. Maybe we were slowed down from some development, maybe we were speeded up by others, but it means that we really are in a, what do you want to call it? He said, like watching the Eben demonstrating that they could lift those 100, 200-pound balls just with their minds inside. Well, in a funny, strange way, if you think of humanity as the surface life on Earth, and that there are advanced intelligences who might even be responsible for seeding life here, who watch and monitor, they may not be the only ones, but there may be something that actually has our best interests at heart and have tried to slow down our military aggression.
Linda, let's talk a little bit about Don and his authenticity, your beliefs in his authenticity. You know, pretty compelling phone call. It adds to your incredible investigation into this initial story that you had on last January. So here he comes along. He hears you on coast to coast. He makes his phone call. You do your follow-up. He's afraid to talk. You're able to convince him to talk. He tells us an incredible story. What's your gut tell you about this guy?
Well, it's in talking with him, now it's been probably a total of 2 hours over different phone calls. It's some of the details that he had. For example, I knew privately and from some of the leaked documents, a place that you haven't heard about publicly, I can guarantee you, that humanoid bodies alive. Everybody says everything must have gone to Wright-Patterson. You hear that more than anything.
Right.
Don, without me, because I'm not downloading any information from him. I am the reporter asking the question.
Right.
He said that his uncle had documents about where some of the live beings and where some of the dead beings and where some of the craft went. And one of the pieces that he remembered was to Peterson Air Force Base, which is our space command, and NORAD. Now, NORAD didn't exist then, but what he meant was to Peterson Air Force Base.
Which was there at the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And now, when you go back into the documents of the late 40s that have been leaked, one of the surprising things is how important Peterson Airfield and ENT, E-N-T, was at that time. And a lot of people have never heard of ENT either. And that's in the Peterson Airfield complex that is now today Space Command. And then NORAD came into the picture in 56 or so, I think it started, when they started building inside of the mountain to build the big NORAD. The fact that our government in 47 to 48 would have gotten bodies, live or dead, to that part of the country makes a great deal of sense when you know the historic context of Wright-Patterson, Area 51, Peterson Airfield, and some other places. And there's details like that that are not commonly out in the literature. Don is not pretending at all to be an expert.
Were you able to shoot any holes through anything that he said, or did he say anything that would make you suspect?
Well, I'm talking with somebody who's remembering in the drama of his uncle showing him material from a briefcase and trying to remember as best he can.
True.
Details. I would say, not only with Don, but with other people, timelines are the most difficult thing. You will find people who they've got an idea in their mind that what they're looking at might be an X date, and it might be before or after. And you will think of, most people will probably think that NORAD has been forever. Everything has beginnings and ends. So you have to look at the fact that today in 2006, if somebody refers to an area of the country as being a location for something, and they know it now, was it in 47 or 48? I really haven't found too many problems. In fact, the biggest question that I had for him immediately was, did your uncle really mean beyond this galaxy? Because I thought that when he said that, he meant beyond this solar system. We talked about it. And he said, no, I remember my uncle saying galaxy. Well, you and I and everybody listening who has followed the research over the years knows that there has only been one so-called commonly referred to source, and that's Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, mm-hmm. a binary star system that's 37.5 light years from here. And Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 may very well be involved in this whole story involved with Earth, but it is also possible that there is a source beyond this Milky Way galaxy. And what is intriguing to me, again, when you ask about Don is not pretending to be an expert. He's trying to tell me what he remembers from his uncle in that briefcase.
He sounded pretty legitimate to me, Linda.
And if his uncle really was talking beyond this galaxy, about 20 years ago, or 17, somewhere in there, I saw with my own eyes a type document with an MJ hyphen number on it. I think it was MJ-8. And it was about different types of extraterrestrial biological entities that our government was tracking coming in and out of this Earth. And one of the names said, Source Origin Andromeda Galaxy. Now,
jeez.
That is a galaxy beyond the Milky Way. Now, how in the world we would ever know, as humans on this Earth, how would we ever get a reality check on where there was a source beyond our solar system, let alone beyond the galaxy? I have no idea, except that we, as the uncle, as so many people who have had dealings with the entities, and I've talked with many other military people who are totally unwilling to go on the record about this, that the idea that we are dealing telepathically with telepathic communication and downloads is a part of the story. And if everybody gets the same data, that's one thing. If everybody gets a lot of different data, maybe that's related to the man who wrote me the letter in the mid-80s and said, we know the Ebens lie. But why would there be lies? Why would there be manipulations? Why would there be military aggression in any way? And these are the questions that haunt me today.
We're going to open up the phone lines for Linda next hour, but we're also going to talk with the mother of Daniel Burrish. And Linda will give you a brief rundown on who Daniel Burrish is before we get into the interview with the mother. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM.